Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's. Brought to you by Poker Stars and the Poker Players Alliance. Shut up and put your money
where your mouth is. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. You got
to know. Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Jackpot. Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Coming up on the show today, nobody will forget the lyrics to the national anthem. And our halftime show will not feature characters from Tron. That's what separates our show from the Super Bowl. Welcome to the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room. I am Paul Harrah's. My partner, Dennis Phillips, is in Las Vegas. Hi, Dennis. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing? You don't like Tron? What's the problem?
Well, I didn't need to have 13,000 kids dressed as Tron in the halftime show with the Black Eyed Peas. That just too much for me.
Okay.
Last week we did not get to do a show, although you were ready to go in Las Vegas, and our guest Eric Seidel was ready to go just off the plane from Australia in Los Angeles. We couldn't get to Harrah's last week to do the show. Our engineer Scott and I were knocked around a little bit by the monster storm that moved through the Midwest, which dropped some ice and snow on us, so our apologies to our listeners. But here we go for show number 105 today. And on the show today, Tony Dunst, who is an online poker pro known as Bond18. He'll become much more famous in the next few months as the guy who does the Raw Deal segment on the World Poker Tour broadcast. They are about to start season number 9 of the WPT. Mike Sexton and Vince Van Patten will still be there, but they've added Tony to be what they call the Simon Cowell of poker on this new season.
I was about to say, famous or infamous? He should have some interesting comments. The guy basically has a nose-hole barred type of comment. He's made some very controversial comments about online versus line play and live play, and I'm just going to be curious to talk to the guy and find out how he's going to approach this.
Yep. Well, he'll be coming up with us in about 15 or 20 minutes. Before we get to poker stuff, though, you didn't go to the Super Bowl this year. I think it's the first time in like 3 years you weren't at the game.
Correct. I did not make it down there, and I'm kind of glad I didn't after hearing the weather reports and that. I got calls from a few people that did make it down to it who were asking me to ship them sweaters and coats and whatever the heck else. it wasn't a pleasant time getting to the game. And then they had some other problems there, too. There were actually, I think, 400 or 500 people who had tickets that couldn't get in the gate because of some sort of a screw-up.
Yep.
So, but, yeah, irregardless, some of the guys from the WCOF, it's a World Championship of Fantasy Sports and Fantasy Football. They had invited me down to the MGM. I went to the VIP party down at the MGM, had a great time down there. There was a couple hundred people in there with all the food, all the drinks, all sorts of entertainment, huge screen set up, and just a total football atmosphere. It's like taking your basement and expanding it by about 100-fold and bringing in a few hundred of your favorite friends. So we had a heck of a lot of fun there.
We had almost exactly the same situation at my house, except it was only three people, me, my wife, and my daughter, but it was all the food and drink you wanted and no lines at the bathroom.
Okay, well, you got me beat on that one.
And then, you party-goer, I hear that after Sunday night's fun at the Super Bowl party, you went out last night in Vegas to a big show.
I did. We went to the Aquanox down at the Venetian, which is one of the best seafood restaurants in Vegas. I highly recommend it. Had a real good meal there. Went over to watch the Blue Man Group and then went backstage to meet them, which was kind of cool. these guys put on a heck of a show. If you've never seen it before, you really should. It's very, very entertaining. It's completely family-oriented, and it's just enjoyable. Just make sure you're not the last person to come in there. They will literally stop the show in mid-skit, whatever they're doing, put a spotlight on you, and follow you all the way to your seat to embarrass the heck out of you.
Yep.
But, afterwards went back there and I actually found out that they can speak.
This is the same thing that people say when they meet Teller after the Penn and Teller show. Oh, you can talk.
Yeah. No kidding. Yeah, the personas or whatever that they portray up there on the stage is not necessarily what they are in real life.
Right. Absolutely. One other thing I want to mention about Super Bowl weekend. I got an email yesterday from a listener named Greg. And by the way, our email address is dennisphillipspoker@gmail.com. He said he's surprised that with all the advertisers spending $3 million on a commercial during the Super Bowl broadcast, he's surprised that neither Poker Stars nor Full Tilt Poker has thought that that would be a venue to get the word out to 100 million plus viewers about online poker. I think I know the reason for this. You may know from inside Poker Stars, but I think I know the reason for this, and that is that the NFL has for a long time just had an anti-gambling standpoint to the extreme that there was a TV station in Las Vegas, the Fox affiliate there, which was carrying the Super Bowl. They had one of the local casino companies, a brick-and-mortar casino company, Station Casinos in Las Vegas, which owns a lot of the casinos that a lot of the locals in that area play in. They wanted to buy time on the local broadcast, not the national broadcast, but the local Vegas broadcast of the Super Bowl, and the NFL told the TV station, you cannot accept that advertising during our game.
Well, and there is... those barriers are coming down. There's no doubt about it. Major League Baseball, Major League, the National Football League, National Hockey League, all of them at one time or another had major oppositions. The National Hockey League has really dropped their barriers down now as far as gaming and poker and the rest of it goes. And the others are coming down. There actually was consideration for Poker Stars getting an ad on at the World Series. But very expensive for a very short ad. You're reaching an awful lot of people that may or may not be poker players. I don't know that I would agree with it if it was available. So, you know, we'll see what the future brings. But you can tell the listener, I would suspect sometime in the next few years you will see ads up there during the Super Bowl pertaining to poker.
Yep, I wouldn't be surprised either, but it is going to take the NFL changing their mind about it, and maybe what changes the NFL's mind about it is the regulation and licensing of online poker, which is something, of course, that we and the PPA and others are still fighting for.
Absolutely.
Okay, some other news to get to. Sad to hear about the death of Jack Urey. Jack Urey is the man who has played in the World Series of Poker main event for the last several years, a man who was in his 90s and showed up every year. He was never a poker professional. He wasn't a guy who went out on the circuit and played. He was a guy who, after years of public service as a letter carrier and being in the military, was retired and was up there in years, and like a lot of people of that age, had played poker for most of his life and decided, I want to go play in the main event. Unlike a lot of people who get in now, he didn't get in through a $39 satellite on Poker Stars or a $200 tournament here at Harrah's in St. Louis or elsewhere. He would cough up the $10,000 each year. And for several years, it was Jack and his son and his grandson all playing in the main event at the same time. Well, last week, Jack Urey finally couldn't announce that he would be in this year's main event. He died at the age of 97 years old.
Wow. Yeah, 97 years old, still competent to sit down and play in a game of cards. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's very, very good.
Now, I will say one thing about that. Last year when we talked about this, I don't know if you remember this, but I mentioned on the show that I'd run into a guy who had been at a table in the main event with Jack, and he said, Jack is the sweetest guy in the world, but he takes forever to do everything. We were getting in a lot fewer hands per hour than every other table because Jack was there. But, you know, you got to accept that, and it's not like he's doing
Absolutely.
It to be a jerk or on purpose or any of that.
No, absolutely not.
And speaking of the World Series of Poker, remember when we had Jack Effel, the tournament director of the WSOP, on the show a few weeks ago, and you were asking, when can I start doing my online registration? You wanted to get into the 25K 6-max and a couple of other things. Registration opened up online yesterday. If you go to WSOP.com, you can now start your buy-ins for any of the 58 events that will make up this year's World Series of Poker.
Unbelievable. 58 events running for 7 weeks. It's a mecca to poker. Any kind of game you want, they're going to have it here.
Yep.
Got to admit, if you play poker, you're probably going to be in Vegas during June of this year.
All right, let's talk about a couple of stories that are about the town that you're spending a lot of your time in now, Las Vegas. One is that they caught the Bellagio biker bandit, a guy named Anthony Carleo, who we talked about on this show when he boldly parked his bicycle at the North Valet, which is right outside, well, not right outside, but very close to the Bellagio poker room, kept his bike running, tipped the valet to leave it there while he ran inside with his motorcycle helmet on, went to a craps table, pulled a gun, and told the stick man and the box man to put a whole bunch of chips in a bag. They did. Denominations from a $100 chip all the way up to the Cranberries, the $25,000 high roller chips. He ran out with them, got on his bike, and sped off. And our speculation at the time, Dennis, as you remember, was, what are you going to do with those 25K chips?
Yep.
Well, now we know. He tried to sell them to people in the 2+2 online poker forums at 20 cents on the dollar.
Wasn't suspicious at all.
No.
No. I can't imagine why anybody would put two and two together, so to say.
Yeah, well, the guy who had some online contact with him called the cops, and the cops tracked him down. They actually had some leads on him from some other people, including an undercover cop that he had tried to sell him to, and a dealer at the Bellagio who had been in some conversations with him. But do you know any more about this story?
Oh, a little bit about it. I mean, the guy gave away one of the 25K chips to the Salvation Army. He approached at least one dealer, and they think two dealers, asking how they would cash in chips. Not suspicious at all there. He actually was staying as a guest of the Bellagio a few days at the Bellagio. He was trying to go down and play in some games and cash in. He was just trying to find some way to do it, and he was definitely not flying under the radar. Either this guy wanted to get caught, didn't give a damn, or something.
He's an idiot. Let's go with he's an idiot.
Okay, well, he's the son, if I understand it right, he was the son of a judge from up at around, and he was around Reno, had a business. It went bankrupt. He went down almost totally broke. He's like a 29-year-old, I think. I might have a little of the facts here wrong,
you're right.
But I'm pretty close to it.
You're right.
And I think he just basically gave up. He made a desperate move, and he grabbed a mess of chips, and then suddenly found out he couldn't do anything with them, and he was just getting bolder and bolder trying to figure out, I'm either going to get rid of these chips or not, and
yep.
It was the or not.
By the way, that judge is supposedly not very popular in his district, and he's up for re-election in April, and this story is certainly not going to help him. But you know who's not happy about this, Dennis?
Who's that?
The players in the cash games at the Bellagio where this guy sat down and apparently, if the stories are right, donked off between $70,000 and $90,000.
Yeah. My understanding is he would go there, try to cash in one of the Cranberries, lose a few thousand dollars, and get up and leave with the rest of it, is what he was wanting to do. And he was having a problem doing it because they weren't accepting the Cranberries. So he was getting rid of the lower denominations and losing every time he sat down. I just wish he'd have called me.
Why, would you have bought some of the cranberries from him, or would you just challenge him to a little heads up?
I wanted to sit down next to him. Good grief. I don't want to buy the things. I'm not going to do that. But if he wants to donate money, I mean, you know, good grief.
Absolutely. All right, now, speaking of high-stakes stuff at the Bellagio, and not just at the Bellagio, but there's now high-stakes games going on at the Aria on occasion as well, and some of the other places in town. Sometimes get big games going, but Bellagio is known for Bobby's Room, where Doyle and Jennifer and Scotty and the other well-known big-name pros have been playing the big game for many, many years. Well, Doyle Brunson, on his blog recently, said he's considering moving from Las Vegas to California. Quote, Las Vegas is becoming more and more a not very desirable place for a poker pro to live. There aren't enough high-limit games. With the economy, the worldwide tournaments, and internet poker, the outlook for live cash games is bleak. Poker is on the verge of making a very significant change, and in my opinion, a very bad change. He said he picked California because there are some mid-level games there that are played regularly, which he could sit down in. Jennifer Harmon was just asked recently in an interview for Poker Pro magazine about this, and she said it's true, and she's thinking of moving with her husband Marco Traniello and their twins to Reno, just because she thinks it would be a better place to raise them, and it's not like she'd be missing out on games that don't take place all that often in Las Vegas anymore. And Phil Ivey said, quote, once Chip Reese died, it was pretty much over. He was pretty much the backbone of the high-stakes games, and now there's really no big game in Vegas anymore except for during the World Series or when a tournament is in town or something like that. There are still games in Vegas, just not as many as there used to be. 4 or 5 years ago, you could count on a game 4 or 5 nights a week. Now it's probably 1 or 2 nights. Now, as I said, you spend a lot more time in Vegas than I do. Have you been to Bellagio and seen the lights out in Bobby's room a lot?
A lot, I have to admit. Now, remember, these guys are talking about nosebleed games. They're talking about playing up there at a level that most people don't even consider. There's still a ton of poker being played in Las Vegas. But literally, if you go to most of these casinos or something, a 2-5 or a 5-10 is the top table, the biggest table. Bellagio obviously still has games bigger than that. Occasionally a Venetian will break one out bigger than that. But for the most part, there's hundreds and hundreds of people playing. There's very few people that are going to go out there and sit down with 50 to 100K and say, shuffle up and deal. It's just... Who really wants to sit down at a table with Jennifer Harmon and Phil Ivey and Doyle Bronson and bring your money out and say, okay, let's play? Because the problem is, with the fewer games and still the big-name guys are wanting to sit in on it, no matter where you go, if you try and sit in on a major game, you know you're going to have half a table of these guys there, the ones that have been playing this for years and years, you know, the top of the top. So, you know, the only guys that are going to come out there are those that can afford to do it and really want to see how good their game is and really want to sit down with this half a dozen pros. And you and I both know when you sit down with half a dozen guys that have been playing for years, that know each other's game, that know that they're all good, you know, a David Benjamin on one side of you and a Phil Ivey on the other and who knows who down at the other end of the table, who are they going to pick on?
Yep,
pretty simple.
No, you're absolutely right. And I guess they just don't have the whales coming in and donating enough to the game on a regular basis. And, you know, with a lot of these guys sitting home and playing high stakes, both on Stars and Tilt, a lot of these pros probably aren't jumping at the chance to go down there and bang heads against each other.
No, that's a good point, too. You can get all the action you want online at whatever level you want. You don't need to go down there and hope a game gets started up or hope a game sustains and doesn't end after an hour or two.
Yep.
It's always there online. There's no doubt about it.
All right. Now, while we're talking again about high-stakes games, we're going to talk with Tony Dunston in a few minutes about the World Poker Tour. But the other big TV poker show, High Stakes Poker, is returning later on this month. February 26th will be the first date of the new season. These are shows that were taped before Christmas there at Bellagio. And the big news of the week is that Gabe Kaplan will no longer be the host of High Stakes Poker. They have replaced him with a guy who I've never been entertained by, a guy by the name of Norm MacDonald, who it says in his description is a comedian, but I've never found him funny. And I hate to say this, and you know, Maury is a friend of ours, and we're looking forward to having Maury back on the show to talk about all of this in a couple of weeks. And I know you're going to be doing the NBC Heads Up again with Maury and everything, but I got to say, this may be the year I watch High Stakes Poker with the mute button on.
Well, I don't know Norm MacDonald. I've never been a huge fan of him either. I know he's an avid poker player. I want to reserve judgment. Gabe, whether you liked him or not, had a lot of insight into the game. He knew the game well and could talk intelligently about it. Hopefully, Norm can do the same. I think it was better when both he and AJ were on there together and could bounce off of each other.
Yep.
Just having a single person up there to do the commentary is going to be difficult for anybody. Having somebody that doesn't have the respect of the other poker players yet, he's going to have to earn it. I will reserve judgment, but right now I'm a little skeptical, shall we say, is the polite way to put it.
Yeah. Now, I just realized I can't watch it on mute because I still have to be able to hear and see Kara Scott. And she will still be on the telecast. The lineup of pros who are going to play this year, Jonathan Duhamel stepping in as the WSOP champion, just as Peter Eastgate did on last year's show, or 2 years ago on the show. Daniel Negreanu, Barry Greenstein, Antonio Esfandiari, Andrew Robel, Doyle, Johnny Chan, Phil Galfond, Jason Mercier, Vanessa Selbst, Haralambos Voulgaris, and Vifford, David Peet. And the amateurs, Mike Baxter, a hedge fund manager who was on the show a few years ago, he'll be back on there. Eric Bonetta, a Rolex watch dealer and wholesaler. Robert Croak is the guy who created Silly Bands, which are hugely popular now, and he just signed on as one of the executives of DeepStacks Live, an online poker training site. Bill Klein, who's a retired businessman and philanthropist. Julian Movsesian, who's a life insurance executive. Phil Ruffin, who owns the Treasure Island Hotel in Las Vegas. And Bill Perkins, who's the president of a private equity and venture capitalist fund. So we will get to see more amateurs on the show this year, but you may have noticed there will be no Phil Ivey, no Tom Dwan, no Patrick Antonius, no Elia Lesra. I'm really going to miss seeing Elia on the show. That's because they're all with Full Tilt, and High Stakes Poker this year is sponsored by PokerStars, and Tilt won't let its pros go on a Stars-sponsored show. What do you think of that change?
Well, and the Poker After Dark, they've changed the format there. They now have a $150K cash game going on, and PokerStars players will... The pros there will not be on that particular show.
Because that's owned by Full Tilt.
Correct. Now, it's bad that the two biggest kids in town can't play in the same sandbox. I'll admit that, and I don't like seeing that. But to be quite honest about it, you now have those two games. You also have the big game. There's rumors of another show starting up. It actually has good sides to it, too. Because nobody wants to sit down at a table with five other, you know, professional pros again. The time when I was on High Stakes and I sit there and I've got Durr and Barry and Phil and Daniel and all the rest of them at the table there, it makes it very, very difficult. If you notice the lineup they have here, they do have a number of amateurs. They do have some new names in there. They have some people whose play won't be as predictable. As long as they're not knitting it up or something like that, this could be a very good mixture. And then, like Barry said a couple of years ago, he doesn't want to sit down with those guys. He wants to sit down with somebody who he can take their money.
Yep. He looks at it as a business proposition. He's not just there for fun and TV exposure. He doesn't need that anymore. He plays poker for money.
Yeah. So you can't blame him. You want the Mike Baxters and the rest of these guys to sit down there. They're going to have a thrill. They're going to have a time, and some of them are going to do well. But this Robert Croak, for all I know, may be a horrible player. He may be a great player. Nobody knows. So when he sits down there, we'll see what happens, and it'll be interesting.
Yep.
And hopefully Norm MacDonald can note it and note some of the good plays and the bad plays and what might actually be happening. I think he'll have opportunities. Let's hope he has the insight for it.
I'm hoping Norm takes a minimalist approach. Talk as little as possible. Let the show run itself.
Think he'll be doing skits like Saturday Night Live skits on the side?
I'm just worried that because it's his first year, he's going to want to impress everybody, the producers and the viewers, by doing too much. And that,
yeah,
that would ruin the show, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. It could. Go ahead.
I was going to say, the other high-stakes show that Dennis was just referring to is a new one that a company is going to be producing out of Reno, Nevada, at the Atlantis Casino Resort there. Not the one in the Bahamas, but one in Reno, Nevada. Red Deck Productions announced last week that they're going to do a new high-stakes hold'em show, that they're going to do 13 episodes. They don't have a TV deal yet, but they're going to produce this spring. And it'll have people like Jungleman 12, Daniel Cates, and Matt Affleck, who we saw in that heartbreaking hand against Jonathan Duhamel in the World Series this year and a deep run the year before. Lucky Chewy, Andrew Lichtenberger will be in there, and Dan Kelly and a bunch of other pros. They're going to be playing some high stakes, no limit hold'em on that. And when we have more details on where that's going to air, we will let you know. Now, let me take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the poker show that's debuting this week with some changes. Season 9 of the World Poker Tour is coming up. Tony Dunst will be doing the Raw Deal segment on that. We'll talk to him about that and other changes on that show in the next segment of The Final Table. This segment of the show is brought to you by PokerStars.net, where, as always, Dennis knows about a lot of stuff that's going on.
Oh, it's just unbelievable the things they have going on there. Obviously, and we've touched them on before, they've got the big game going where you can go on there and qualify for free to have a chance to sit down at a table with a half a dozen of your favorite TV pros. There's a chance to do that. They have the new home games, and they have the home games now being set up to be able to play with the pros. So you can qualify for that. Go on there, set up your own home game, bring in your own friends and that, and you'll have a chance to have one of us to sit down with you and play a game. They have the NAPT that's going on. The next one that's starting up is going to be out in California at the Bike. It's going to be the second week of March. They've got a whole series of tournaments going on out there at that time, heads-up tournaments, a variety of other ones, and, of course, the main event out there, the $5,000 buy-in one that last year almost every one of the NAPTs topped the 800 mark, and this one is expected to do the same. So you've got a huge thing going on there. I mean, PokerStars is all around the world. I don't care whether you want to go play in a New Zealand poker league or you want to go to Brazil where it's coming up here next week or you want to go to a European one. If you want to play poker and you want to qualify for it online, go to PokerStars.net, qualify for free, and you can take a trip around the world, to be quite honest about it. Everything from Dream Games to Australia to different charity events they do there. It's just unbelievable. You got to keep on top of it and got to check it out. I'm telling you what, there's always going to be something else coming up on PokerStars.
This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show with Team PokerStars Pro Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harris at Harrah's St. Louis. Back in a moment on 590 The Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com, and our podcast via iTunes and on thechipleader.com. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show with Team PokerStars Pro Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas. I am Paul Harris in the poker room of Harrah's St. Louis, where the Bad Beat jackpot is over $140,000 and the tournaments go twice a day, every day. This Saturday, they'll be having a Super Circuit Satellite where your $150 buy-in could get you a seat in the main event of the WSOP Circuit event that's coming here in April. We'll have two full weeks of coverage of that two-week event here at Harrah's, all the way up through the April 10th main event, a $1,600 buy-in event. You can win your way into that by finishing high in the $150 buy-in Super Circuit Satellite this Saturday, the 12th of February, and another one on the 26th of February. They're doing them twice a month. Yeah, you can win your way into the circuit event right here at Harrah's. For information and the whole schedule of tournaments, go to harrahs.com/STLpoker. Come down and play tournaments or live games here at Harrah's St. Louis. Our guest today is Tony Dunst. Now, you may not know that name yet, but I predict you're going to know it very well if you watch the World Poker Tour telecast this year, because his Raw Deal segments are really going to shake up the poker industry. He's going to be giving his honest, candid, irreverent opinions on the poker action during the WPT broadcast. You'll still, of course, get Mike Sexton. You'll still, of course, get Vince Van Patten. You'll get Kimberly Lansing as the hostess. You'll also get the Royal Flush Girls. But I think Tony is going to be the breakout star of the WPT this year, and we're happy to have him on the Final Table. Hi, Tony. How are you?
Hey, Paul, how are you doing? Thanks for the nod of confidence.
Oh, you're very welcome. I should also mention that Tony is a pretty good poker pro himself. Six caches last year at the World Series of Poker, including finishing 50th in the main event. And, Tony, if my records are correct, you are the reigning champion of the Doyle Brunson Beer Pong Classic.
Well, your records are very much correct, sir.
You're going to be defending your crown this year?
I would say my highest priority for everything coming up this year. That's, you know, my one legitimate accomplishment in the industry, and I just value it so much.
Well, I'll tell you what, you've got your work cut out for you. I mean, with all the different shows that are coming on, how are you going to make the WPT stand out? What are you going to bring to it to make people want to watch?
Well, to be honest, I feel like a lot of the analysis that goes on in poker shows is either by guys who have been removed from the strategy element from some time and been on the broadcasting thing. So I'm bringing a way of thinking that is a lot more, you know, modern and evolved from the online scope of things. And I'm just a really blunt guy. You know, I don't try and say anything necessarily outrageous or absurd, but I always just tend to speak my mind. It comes very natural to me, and I feel that, you know, because I became a professional poker player and I didn't have to deal with career or coworkers or any family responsibilities or, you know, any social obligations within college, I developed a way of speaking that was just really direct and blunt and to the point.
But are you going to have to worry about stepping on toes if a friend of yours makes an idiotic play and, you know, triple barrels a bluff and gets called by some guy? Are you going to really go after them?
Of course I am. That's my job.
And it doesn't make any difference who you go after. I mean, obviously, if you're sitting at a table, there are tells, there's betting patterns, there's all sorts of things that don't show up on a TV screen. Somebody
yep.
makes a move that is quite questionable, a known TV name. Are you going to take them to the woodshed, shall we say?
Sure. I mean, I don't think my job is just to show up and rip people apart. I've done a number of segments where I've complimented people's play, where I said, oh, I think they were thinking about doing this move for the following motivations, but... You know, it turns out that a lot of the guys that make the really big blunders are obviously the less experienced guys. And, you know, I don't want to just sit there and be like, oh, my God, you know, they're all such idiots or anything like that. I'm willing to say this hand was played abysmally because of the following reasons. And I don't care who it is, be they a huge name professional or someone who's new to the game or a good friend of mine, if I think they played the hand poorly, that's precisely what I'm going to say and why.
Tony, I've got to ask you about the WPT telecast. It's been on for mm-hmm. years and years and years, and I know that you're one of the changes, as well as the Royal Flush Girls, who will certainly add some pulchritude to the broadcast. But one of the things that's been a complaint of people through the years is that the telecast got to be the same. It was always, we only get to see the end of it. It's always six guys. Maybe we've heard of one or two of them at the final table. And we get to see essentially an all-in shove fest because the blinds are so high compared to their stack size. Is it going to change at all in regard to that this year?
I feel like the WPT is very conscious of the changes that need to be made in that realm. Not only have they added me, but they added Matt Savage, who is one of the most, you know, renowned and respected tournament directors in poker, and who has tried to make it so that there are deeper stacks at the final table so we get more thorough and intricate play instead of just all-in fest where, you know, a lot of money is being decided by what are essentially pre-flop coin flips. I think you're seeing a greater emphasis in discussing intricate strategy in the game instead of just trying to you know, make things really bland and, you know, with a lot of catchphrases or whatever. I think the WPT is very conscious of how the industry has changed and in some ways evolved past them in terms of, you know, televised poker, and they've caught themselves and said, okay, you know, the shift in what our demographic and our audience wants to see is heading this way. We will look to appeal to them with the following changes, and I think it's going to go pretty well. I can't promise anything, but, you know, from what I've seen, it looks like we're heading that way.
Well, cool. I'll tell you one of the hardest things I've had. I've done some analysis. I've done some commentary. I just did it down at the PCA down there, and they had us doing it live without mm-hmm. being able to see any of the hole cards. And, you know, the announcer that's with you looks over and says, well, Dennis, you're a pro. What do you think he has, or what would he have to do this? So you're analyzing it on the fly. You have the luxury, at least, of seeing the hands ahead of time and everything. So might be able to cut some people a little bit of slack because of that, you know,
yep.
not live, not the action. You know, people need to understand that, you know, there's lots of different ways to play a hand. And I've misplayed enough of my own hands. I'm dreading the time when I miss playing one in front of you because you'll probably rip me over the coals, but it's part of poker. It happens.
Yeah. It really is. There's a lot of different ways you can approach any given hand of poker, and there are, you know, there are some absolutes. There are some, you know, mathematical givens where it's just like, wow, you just can't play that hand that way and be profitable, or, you know, clearly this other option is a superior option for the following reasons. But like you said, there are a number of situations where what's best is very speculative and based on information that might not be available to me, might not be available to the viewer. In that case, I'm going to try and come off with a more mild or open-minded opinion of the hand, or maybe I'm just going to say, I believe this player is making these decisions for the following reasons. This is what I think is going on in his head, and this is what I think he's trying to accomplish in the hand.
Tony, are we going to see more coverage from earlier in the tournament so it's not just that final table?
Yes, we are. They are making a push towards showing some early stage. I don't think we'll get necessarily a ton of hands from the early stage of the tournament, but we'll get kind of a story of how the early stage developed, and then I think we'll also see some of the largest pots that go on or some of the wildest things that happen during the course of the tournament.
Good. That's a nice change.
Mm-hmm. You were selected from, my understanding, hundreds and hundreds of contestants there. How did you go through that process? What made you stand out ahead of everybody else?
Well, that was actually my first job interview in about 7 or 8 years. They had open casting, where I think about a couple hundred people sent in videos, and maybe 40 people actually showed up and tried out live. But I did theater in college, so I have a presentation background, and I'm a pretty socially extroverted, talkative guy. I've got a lot of writing experience. I've been making strategy videos for one of the training sites for about 3 years now. I've been a mod at 2+2 for about 5 years and wrote a ton of strategy posts. Worked on a book, and generally consider myself a pretty, you know, affable, easygoing guy, and I think they got a vibe that I would be very low maintenance on a professional standpoint. So I just kind of went in there, and I was myself, and I joked around a lot because I thought they were looking for a combination of thoughtful analysis and humor, and they liked what I had to say.
This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris and Tony Dunst, who's the host of a new segment on the World Poker Tour telecast that debuts season number 9 this Sunday on Fox Sports Midwest here in St. Louis and the rest of the Fox Sports Net all across the country. Tony is also just back from Australia, a continent where he's had quite a bit of success in tournaments over the last couple of years. How was your run at the Aussie Millions this year?
I cashed one time in, I think, what was 8 tournaments, and unfortunately it was all rather uneventful in terms of what happened on the felt.
Hopefully you didn't run into Eric anywhere down there.
Which
Eric Seidel had a heck of a series down there.
Man, I don't want to run into Eric Seidel anywhere. That guy is a beast.
You know, speaking of Seidel, who we're going to have on this show next week, by the way, and have him talk about that $250,000 buy-in sit-and-go, I hear mm-hmm. that during that sit-and-go, they had a 30-second clock on the table. Like online, you had 30 seconds to make your decision in a huge buy-in event like that. I'm curious from both Tony and Dennis what you think of having something like that in more events so you don't have somebody tanking for 3, 4, 7 minutes on a decision, which could be a big one, but I've seen it on small ones too.
Well, I like it. It's certainly coming from an online background. I'm very used to the idea of making quick decisions, but I think it's overall a good concept, and it prevents people from wasting time or stalling or, you know, just being pointless with the way they conduct themselves at the table. But I also think that that's the kind of thing where maybe someone get a button where they get one extra 2-minute time bank when they really want to slow things down and think it over. But I think speeding up the game is always a positive thing and doesn't necessarily have any major drawbacks. And I also think that one of the reasons they had that going was they were going to try and get that tournament done in something like 8 hours because some of the businessmen who were so pushing to play it had a flight to catch.
Oh, really?
I didn't know anything about the flies, but I agree with you, too. It can get so frustrating sometimes you just sit around and wait because the same person, it seems like, always takes counts to 30, and then he looks at his hand, and then, you know, you've sat with people like that. There's just no
Absolutely.
Reason for it. Play the game, guys. It just does not take that long to make every single decision.
But Dennis,
especially, I've just seen guys that irritate the heck out of me because 2 seconds into it, you know they're going to fold. And they've got to sit there and drag it out for 60 seconds. You know, but you just want to reach over and we know you're folding. Would you just please fold?
But I'm curious about this. Let's say they did, and I like Tony's idea of giving them like one chip that can buy you a 2-minute time bank at a live table. But if you're playing something like the World Series of Poker main event where you got to go for 8 days, would one chip be enough or would you have to get a new chip every day? Or I mean...
Probably a new one every day, I would think, especially with a an 8 or 9 day tournament. That seems pretty fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just, I just don't like the ridiculous ones. Somebody's got you know, a $40 pot out there, and he takes 2 minutes to make a decision whether to call or not. You know, give me a break.
Yeah.
And there's no way, though, to distinguish between the two that I can think of. You can't make it that, well, it has to be a, you know, an all-in before you have more than 30 seconds or something like that. I can't come up with any feasible way to make that work. But anything that can speed the game up, I actually encourage and I like.
Tony, you've not only played in Australia, but I hear that you went to Macau a few months ago where the action is supposedly incredibly wild.
I've been there four or five times. It's like Las Vegas if you took everything fun and cool out of it. It's all baccarat tables and whores and very little else. And I would not recommend that anybody go there unless they really just want to play some poker tournaments. I was told about the really high-stakes cash games going on somewhere upstairs. I wasn't given any access to them, and I had no reason to be there. But, you know, Macau was something that got found out by the guys in Australia around 2007, 2008, when PokerStars started investing all this time and money in building a poker economy there in order to try and get it to branch off to mainland China. And for a while, I'm told the cash games were amazing, and I bet they'd still day level. Macau is probably not that crazier than many other places, and I think its reputation has been overblown because there was such high-stakes action going on.
Well, I guess it's a good thing it's so far away, so I don't ever have to worry about going there.
Yeah, man, don't sweat that one. Pick somewhere nice.
All right. A few years ago, you made some comments comparing online versus the live play, and seemed to tout the online players as being superior to the live players. Is that attitude changed any, or do you just see it as two different type games now, or what?
I think I have more respect for live players than I did a few years ago. I think I was very much just like a younger guy who wanted to shoot his mouth off and prove something. That said, I do think the online players are really the ones evolving the game. I mean, the simple fact is we're playing many more hands of poker than any live player can play. We're sharing more information with each other online through our forums, through our tracking programs, through things like AIM and Skype. And we've just got so much practice at it all and, you know, so much information to form our game that I just don't see how the live players could really keep up. That said, I think there are some really excellent live players, and I think that being good at live poker as a skill is underrated amongst the online community. There's not a complete transference of skills that goes on when you go from online to live, and it's a very difficult thing to adjust to in some ways, and certainly some online players who are phenomenal in the online arena are, you know, borderline break-even or losing players at live because they're so bad at some of the other elements that go on there.
I'll tell you one of the things that I find funny as a person who plays almost exclusively in live cash games, particularly when I'm in a cash game, but also when I'm in a tournament, I can always spot the online player. He's the one who's always impatient because he's used to 4, 8, or 12 tabling, and the pace of live play is driving him crazy.
It's exactly what I'm talking about. There's a lot of online guys who fall into that description and wind up blowing up stacks, be it in cash games or tournaments, because they just get bored.
How much poker are you going to be able to play now live with this your deal now as being the host of the Raw deal? Is it going to take up most of your time, or can we still see you at a lot of the tournaments?
Quite a lot, if not more than ever, because I'm given a large amount of incentive to get a tournament win and say, you know, hey, that wasn't a bad hire. This kid actually knows what he's talking about. He can put up results, you know, which I haven't really done that much of yet. So, I feel very strongly about getting out there and playing a lot of live poker, plus the WPT's deal does not prevent me from playing in their events.
Oh, you can play in the WPT events?
Yes, I can, and Mike and Vince can play in them as well now.
So is there a three-way last longer bet in every one?
There really ought to be.
All right.
I can't understand why you wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know that I'd... Yeah, I would. Never mind.
Yeah, you would jump in there. You would
absolutely would. Never mind. Absolutely.
Hey, one thing I got to ask about online stuff. Since you mentioned that you've been a mod on 2+2, mm-hmm. and you've done a lot of stuff online, are you ready for the haters?
Oh, I've had so many haters already. I've had hate threads about me for like 3-4 years now. I mean, you just can't have everyone like you. Unless you just want to be meek and quiet and good at everything you do, like say Patrick Antonius. somebody is going to hate you. I'm sure there are people out there who hate Antonius, and there are going to be people who hate somebody as opinionated and, you know, talkative as I am, no problem, and I've come to accept that. And I think, you know, what really matters is the way you treat people, the way you treat people on your daily interactions and, you know, within the industry, and whether the people who interact with you have good things to say about you. As far as randoms on the Internet is concerned, I'm not sweating it.
This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show with Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harris in the poker room at Harrah's St. Louis. Our guest is Tony Dunst, who you'll see starting this Sunday on Fox Sports Net on the new ninth season of the World Poker Tour, doing the Raw Deal segments. Tony, we'd like to bring you in for something that we're going to try to do a little bit more on this. This is the third year of our show. Today's show, in fact, is the first of our third year of the Final Table, and we're going to try to get to more.
Wow, congrats, man.
Thank you. We're going to try to get to some more listener email this year, and the email address is DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com. And we're conscious, very much so, of the fact that a lot of our listeners don't play high-stakes games. If they sit down in a cash game, they're playing 1-2 or 1-3 or 2-5 cash games, maybe working their way up to a 5-10. People who are playing $40 and $60 and $75 tournaments. So we're going to try to do some strategy talk for them. And here's an email we just got in the last couple of days from a listener named Ernest Bell, who says, I've played in a weekly $30 rebuy tournament the past 3 weeks at a local casino in Minnesota. My problem is I have been card dead. I've not picked up a string of good opening hands that I could either call or raise with. I've rebought at the first break all 3 weeks. I've tried to raise to steal blinds, but someone always goes over the top, meaning a fold by me. Should I chalk this up to just plain poker, or do you have any suggestions? And I'll start with you, Tony, and then Dennis can chime in.
Well, I think it's certainly very easy to run bad over the course of four tournaments. You know, you could definitely play four tournaments, never have much in the way of hands, not have flips go your way, and things wouldn't, you'd bust out and you'd never really have a chance. And it'd feel like, man, I'm just beating my head against the wall. It's not going my way, but there might be nothing you can do. It's possible that if he feels like he's folding way too many hands, he needs to loosen things up. But I would say over the course of four tournaments, he probably shouldn't sweat it.
Well, I wish I had a little more information. It's a $30 rebuy tournament. I'm guessing the levels go by very, very rapidly, and you're going to have to get in there and mix it up. I would suggest he starts looking at hands that may be flips, and he may end up having to do it. It is a rebuy tournament. I think he also needs to look at his position a lot stronger. In a rebuy tournament, sometimes position can get you in trouble, but I always try to, on these short-level ones, to put pressure back on the people to try to do the raising out of position, to try and get a little too aggressive. You know, three betting them, four betting them, something like that to put pressure back on them. It can burn you, granted, but if you're pushing it in short levels, you know, 15, 20-minute levels, you have to gamble some more. You have to get your chips in there. And if you
just sit
back, you're going to run into a problem.
What were you going to add, Tony?
I was just saying, I think Dennis is right. I think if you're working with really fast blind structures, you've got to be willing to get your chips in there. Dennis is correct.
Yeah. And by the way, in a $30 rebuy tournament, I'm guessing you're probably starting with small stacks anyway. So when you three or four bet somebody, you got to be willing to put your whole stack on there. And if you bust on a race, you know, that's where the rebuy comes from.
Yeah. And a lot of people, especially some of the amateurs, don't realize you're not as big of an underdog as you many times think. You know, you have a deuce seven against an ace jack, you're still only a 2-to-1 dog on this thing. So, you know, you can get them in there. You can take some risks, and it is a rebuy tournament.
All right, Ernest, we appreciate your email. Thank you very much. Here's another one from a listener named Stuart, who's getting frustrated. I'm not going to read you the whole email, but he's getting frustrated in live cash games when there's a maniac at the table who's contributing to everybody else's stack but his, and he's out of position against the maniac. So the question is, how do you play out of position against a maniac?
I would say he should be checking a lot more of his hands that have strong to medium showdown value to the maniac. Like, pretty much, he should form his game around every time I've got something, or every time I've got something that can tolerate some aggression, check call, check call, check call, unless it's the kind of maniac who just wants to try and blow up raises and stuff like that, then with your best hands, you would fast play against him. But generally, if you're out of position, then anytime you get something that you feel comfortable calling down multiple streets with, start check calling, and then also start thinking, okay, when I'm on the flop and I have a little piece of it, if I'm going to call his flop bet, can I call the barrels that are probably coming on multiple other streets, because a maniac is very likely to fire them.
I agree with that totally. The other thing about it, when I'm sitting at a cashing, I'm there to make money. I'm not there necessarily for anything else. If I'm in a bad position with a person that's being that aggressive, I'll ask for a seat change. I might even ask for a table change. I'm there to make money, not to get frustrated or whatever at this table. The other thing about it is when you do have the maniac, do remember it is so easy to trap a maniac, and I still love doing it. So you might end up losing a series of smaller hands or let him seem to run a roughshod all over you. But as long as you're willing to turn around and play back at him, you can trap the heck out of a person like that.
That sounds like the Phil Hellmuth philosophy.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Well, that's what he's always talking about. All right, Stuart, thanks for your email. And one last one for you, Tony. A listener named Lauren says, I have trouble when I'm in a tournament and there are short stacks at the table. I want to get in there with medium pairs and connectors, but I know that these guys are probably looking to get all their chips in, and I'm worried about risking my chips.
I would say shy away from opening pots where you don't have a hand that feels comfortable calling one of their shoves. So look around to the players on your left, and if you're going to open into a bunch of guys who have the kind of stack size where they're probable to shove on you, then you should just fold the hands that you feel not comfortable raise calling with, and then turn more hands that are kind of borderline into something that you would raise call with, and open those with the plan of snapping them off.
Okay. Actually, that's one of my things I always harp on. You should be able to know the chip stack and what their in value is for every single player around your table during that tournament. You have to be aware of that because of that fact that somebody's running short and he's going to be shoving on you. That's why some people say you should never limp into a pop. The heck with that. I absolutely can limp in if I'm trying to do a pot control, where I'm trying to keep it small so I can see a flop. Whereas if I raise, this guy's going to be shoving on me. But if I limp in, he may only be 3Xing it or something like that and allowing me to see a flop. You know, there's possibilities that way. You've got to keep track of what the short stacks are and where they're at you and who's going to be likely to shove. And you're absolutely right. If there's a lot of shoving potential, I'll muck some hands that I normally would play, that I normally would raise with.
All right, Lauren, thank you for your email. Once again, if you've got a strategy question, you can email them to DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com, and we'll get into them with Dennis and future guests as well. And, Tony, thank you for taking part of that. Are you playing in the LAPC? Are you out at Commerce?
Yes, I am. I'm not at Commerce right now, but I will be there to play those events in about 10 days.
Well, please.
I got to ask you one more quick question, if I could.
Sure.
You're now known as the debonair dresser, shall we say.
Yeah.
Was this an image thing? Was this something you wanted to do to help your play, to use it as a tell or a reverse? Well, why did you decide to do that? I'm curious.
It's actually just the clothes I like to wear on very often a daily level. I've been reading GQ and Esquire since my early teens. I had a really fashionable father. I was a big fan of the James Bond movies. I like fashion and style. It's something that has always been a hobby of mine, and I think is also an interest of many women. So I feel very comfortable dressing it up. You never know what temperature is going to be in a casino, and I have a lot of pockets to hide things in, so it's great.
Yeah, I think we heard the real thing that he glossed over there just a little bit. He wants to be a chick magnet.
Well, who doesn't? It's no secret. I mean, there's not a lot of guys out there that are like, no, keep the girls away from me. I mean, there are those guys, but there's not a lot of straight guys who are like, oh, man, I'm sick of all these girls coming over and talking to me. Like, I don't know, if they like it, I like it.
Yeah, but you know what? Based on the way a lot of guys dress in the poker room, that must be their philosophy.
That must be, yes. Well, I think that they know that when they go to the poker room, they're not going to meet any women.
Yeah.
Well, that's changing a little. I know there's not very many women involved in it now, but it's getting more popular. We'll see. We'll see what the future brings.
Tony, we really appreciate you joining us here. We look forward to seeing your Raw Deal segments on the World Poker Tour telecast. They start this Sunday night on Fox Sports Net all across the USA. And good luck at the LAPC, and we'll probably run into you this summer out at the Rio.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you.
Take care.
Tony Dunn's joining us here at the final table. with Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harris at Harris St. Louis. A reminder that this is a place to come not just for poker, but all the great table games as well. And if you want to play the slots, well, they've got tons of them in the, both the smoke-free and the smoke-freely sections, plus lots of restaurants and the eat-up buffet and all the rest, all at Harris St. Louis. For more information, go to harrisstlewis.com, and you'll find out all you need to know about this place. Dennis, next week I'm excited about talking to Eric Seidel.
Absolutely. Eric's a good friend of mine, the new member of the Poker Hall of Fame, a record-setting almost month of January. I can't believe anybody else has ever won that much money in January.
Yep.
So, yeah. Well, did you see what his tweet was on February 1st?
No.
Oh, I can't. It was something like, well, so far this month has been dull.
That's a great way to end this edition of The Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com, and our podcast via iTunes and on thechipleader.com.